This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
We're talking with John Grisham. This is News Radio 1070 WINA. Give us an update about what's going on now. It's my understanding that you're putting the finishing touches on your next novel. Is that right?
Yes, the finishing touches are almost there as of today. The last-minute copy edits, such important things as the author photo, which is always a pain in the rear. Dedication, the author's note, the flap copy, the stuff you put on the inside of the flap to entice some reader to buy the book in the bookstore, really important things like that. But the manuscript is done. It's called The Associate, and it comes out in January, so I'm about to kick back for a couple of months.
Tell me, can you give us a preview of what this new book is about?
Sure. It's about lawyers. Thought I'd try something different. It's very similar to The Firm. Over the years, it's been kind of odd and amusing as the books have piled up to hear people say, you know, I like your books, but I really love your early stuff. And as it turns out, most people who deal in popular entertainment, whether it's, think about it, with music or actors or authors or whatever, that's a fairly common sentiment. You know, I like your early stuff better. It took me a while to realize that because it kind of hurt my feelings. You know, like my more recent stuff is not as good. So over the years, I've been telling myself what you ought to do is write a book in the same vein as the first two or three, just pure old-fashioned suspense. And that's what I've done. And there's no message, there's no sermon, there's nothing. The book has no socially redeeming value whatsoever. It is pure entertainment. And
nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. And you know, it's fun to do it every now and then. And so it's about a young lawyer who joins a law firm for all the wrong reasons. It's the first time I've used New York City for a setting because it's the largest law firm in the world. And the guy goes to work there. He doesn't want to. He's forced to by some people who know a very dark secret that this young man has. And that's all I can tell you at this point.
When you talk about writing suspense, tell me about the process that goes through your mind. Do you think of these ideas as you're driving down the road or working in the yard? Or do you sit down at the computer? Now, I'm assuming you write it at a computer, not longhand. I don't know. But what is the process? Do you find yourself at a point in the book where you're like, hey, now it's time to throw in a real twist? Or do you start with the twist and work backwards?
Well, it never happens as I'm working in the yard because I refuse to do yard work. I just don't do yard work. I do drive down the highway, and it's funny, you know, this is book number 22, and I can remember, you know, where almost every story came from. Some take years to develop. I've always got a list of ideas and notes and partial outlines and things like that. Most of them, though, just, you know, hit fast, hit hard. Some, I'll see something in a newspaper. Obviously, they're all law-related, so I'm always on the prowl. I read newspapers, magazines, always looking for a story with a twist that, you know, you can take and feed into, hyperactive imagination and maybe come up with a good story. Most of the ideas don't stick. I'm continually startled by these brilliant ideas I have for books, and 6 months later they just, you know, they go nowhere. But the good ones stick around, and you know, I work on them for a while, and eventually they become outlines. You know, you've got to have, a book has got to have certain parts. It's got to have a very compelling, you got to have a hook. You got to hook your readers in early. And you've got to be able to maintain the narrative tension, the stress, the pressure, the suspense for 300 pages leading up to an ending that's dramatic and maybe not always expected, something unpredictable. And there are, you know, there are things you learn as you write, ways to build suspense without overdoing it, without making it seem too formulaic. But I, you know, that's pretty much the problem. You know, I didn't invent this. I think I learned it by reading other great suspense writers when I was young, and still read them. Still read them.
Who do you read? Who are your favorites? If when John Grisham goes out to buy a novel and buy a good book for the summer or over the holidays, who do you read?
There are a handful of writers who I get excited when I hear they got a book coming out. Think about that. I mean, your favorite writer is the person that you really can't wait for the next book to come out. And, you know, there aren't many of those, sadly. John le Carré, the British espionage guy, is my favorite contemporary writer. He's got one coming out in a couple of weeks, and I can't wait to get my hands on it. He's still the master of really, really intelligent suspense. I mean, I got my favorites. Pat Conroy's an old buddy that you know, writes a book every 10 years, and so it's hard to, you know, get excited about Pat's books because they're so far apart. Stephen King is a guy I know pretty well, and I pick up all of Steve's books. I don't finish all of them, and I tell him that because they're too long. I keep up with the other lawyer writers. Scott Turow is a buddy, and we always send each other, you know, the books when they come out, and I read all Scott's books. He's a great writer. Dave Baldacci, I read most of Dave's books. Some guys like that. I tend to read, though, in the past few years, more nonfiction.
Really?
Yeah. I get kind of tired of fiction, and I've just been, for some reason, reading just a wild assortment of...
You gravitate towards any particular kind of nonfiction?
No. 8 years ago, I started flying. I took flying lessons, okay? So I got hung up on, you know, books about airplanes. I mean, that lasted for 3 years. Drove my wife crazy. Everywhere we looked, there was a stack of books about airplanes. So but that came and went. I got tired of that. I love a good baseball book. There aren't many good ones. In fact, most of the great baseball stories have already been written, I'm afraid. Right now, I'm in the middle of a 600-page book, The History of the Second World War, which is fascinating. So, I mean, that's pretty dull stuff for most people, but it's more nonfiction. I love Mark Twain. For the past 2 years, I've been on a Mark Twain binge, reading a lot of his stuff, biographies about Mark Twain, his autobiography. But I've kind of through that. I mean, you kind of take it in streaks, you know, just stuff you get fired up about.
We're talking with one of America's greatest writers, John Grisham. I know this is like asking, you know, who's your favorite child, but do you have a favorite book? And number two would be, do you have a favorite character? Whether that character was a good person or a bad person in the story, do you have a favorite character?
It's hard to say. It's hard to answer the question, do you have a favorite book? I'll answer it like this. I can think of two books that I read probably every 5 years. And I think that's a pretty good way to answer a question, what's your favorite book? It's the book you keep going back to. And there are two books. The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. He's probably my favorite author. And I read that book when I was 17 years old and a senior in high school, and have always been crazy about the story and the way it's written. John le Carré published a book 25 years ago called Little Drummer Girl, which is an absolute classic tale of suspense and espionage, and it's just a brilliant book, and I've read that book probably every 3 years. In fact, if I ever go through a drought where I'm worried about what I'm writing, I'll read Little Drummer Girl just to kind of, you know, like as a workout to get the juices going again. And also to remind myself of how far I've got to go to be as good as that guy, you know. So those two books come to mind. I can't think of a favorite character. There are so many good characters in Little Drummer Girl.
How about a character from one of your novels? Do you have a favorite?
A couple come to mind. I love Rudy Baylor. He's the Matt Damon character in Rainmaker. Mm-hmm. Guy fresh out of school, couldn't find a job, you know, on the streets practicing law, trying to, you know, hoping for a big break. Jake Brigance and A Time to Kill, that was very autobiographical because I wrote that story when I was actually living that life as a small town lawyer in Mississippi and kind of hoping and dreaming for the big case, the big break, you know, that would bring in lots of clients, and that never happened. You know, the little boy Luke Chandler in A Painted House is also very autobiographical. That book, that setting is the way I lived, where I lived the first 7 years of my life. Those three come to mind, yeah.
Let me ask you about politics. You are a formerly elected official in Mississippi. You're now a longtime resident of Virginia. And have always been interested in politics, I would assume. What is it about politics now that particularly draws your attention and perhaps even your activism?
Well, as you say, I've been involved in it for a long time. I ran for the state House of Representatives, which is the House of Delegates equivalent here in Virginia, in Mississippi when I was 28 years old, 1983, so 25 years ago. Got elected and then got reelected and served two terms and probably would have stayed with that for a while, but I found a new career. I get involved for the same reasons that so many people get involved. You enjoy the sport of politics. You enjoy the challenge of helping to elect people you believe in. You know, ideologically, we are who we are, where you come from. That's what you believe, and you want to see your people get elected. And nowadays, politics, campaigning is so expensive. It takes an enormous amount of money. And so if you're able, you write the checks and you help raise the money. However, I'll have to say, we're in month 20 of this campaign, which is ridiculous. I mean, we're going to spend probably $1 billion from January of last year through November of this year. And I was talking to Larry Sabato recently about this, and he said that he was afraid that we have now entered the era of the permanent campaign. And that's what it is. He's right. You know, the new president's going to be sworn in January, and we'll get a break for a few months. But before you know it, they're going to be hanging around Iowa again, mm-hmm. and you're going to have the gossip about who's thinking about it. And before you know it, we're going to be back into the campaign, and it borders on ridiculous. There's so many reforms that should be put into effect during the primaries, caps on spending, and anyway, a lot of stuff. Right now, I'm just sort of exhausted, like a lot of people. I can't wait for it to be over.
What goes through your mind when we were watching the nightly news recently and you see McCain say this and Obama say that? I'm curious what goes through your mind specifically about this race this year for the White House?
Well, you have to discount so much of what is said by the candidates, especially at that level. The truth is, there's not a whole lot the president can do starting in January to turn around the economy, which is the issue right now. It's got everybody not only worried but terrified. There's going to be very little money, discretionary spending for the president to have. There's going to be, I wouldn't want to be president with all the problems facing us. At this point, though, again, with the nonstop campaigning, nonstop ads, nonstop chit-chat on cable TV, I'm not sure I hear much of anything anymore. It just kind of goes, you know, in one ear and out the other. Maybe I'm just kind of jaded and cynical, but it's, you know, enough's enough. Let's vote. We should go vote tomorrow. Get it over with.
Get it over with.
Get it over with, yeah.
John Grisham, it's a real honor to talk to you, and I want to thank you very much. It's a real thrill.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.